If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
And so, you know, just kind of recognizing that, hey, I was kind of hitting a brick wall here. Who can I call that can really become my expert to solve this problem?
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Ryan Gibson is CIO and co-founder of Spartan Investment Group, LLC. For SIG, Ryan is responsible for investor relations and capital raises for projects. In Ryan's role as Chief Investment Officer, he connects individual investors to SIG's real estate private placement investment opportunities. Hey, Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Man, it's awesome. I'm pumped to do this interview with you. Obviously, I've known you and Scott here for a few years now, and it's been awesome just to watch you guys take off kind of like a rocket and grow. So I'm excited to hear, you know, kind of your story. I know we know a little bit about, you know, where you guys started, but if you can kind of tell us briefly where you started, where you are now, how you got there, and kind of what you focus on, that would be awesome.
So started as an airline pilot and really entrepreneurial overall, and just really wanted to start my own business. As you know, I met Scott, and I won't bore the listeners with that story again. But we had a good alignment. We were just neighbors in Washington, D.C. And over the years, transitioned from being a pilot to starting our own business. And I think what really kind of helped that explode is doing offerings and syndications to and growing our investor network. And that's really been my role in the business.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. So talk to us about that. What are some problems you've overcome? What are some things that you've done right, things you've done wrong? I guess give us a preview of what that looks like for you.
Yeah. So I think it all started with just having a good network of people that you know. And it just isn't like specifically financially, but just being out in the community and doing things like rowing and running and flying and being involved in many different activities where you meet people naturally. And people get to know who you are and kind of trust you. And then couple that with actually taking the time to learn about real estate and learn about all the ins and outs and be open-minded, even though when you learn a lot, you continue learning and you continue to grow your knowledge base. Fusing those things together is what I think provided, and starting a business is really what it provided the investors a level of comfort with investing in our business. Because they're investing with us as people, but then they also see that we're knowledgeable about what we're doing and very capable of taking down a project. And that recipe has been what really has pushed us to, you know, this year being the 8th fastest growing private real estate company is just the combination of those two things, you know, great relationships, you know, great networking, and then having the knowledge and the team to really execute. It just played nicely into that. Where that started was it just me and Scott, obviously. But, you know, we went to a conference, the syndication conference that the real estate guys put on back in 2016. And it was a great broad brush conference on, hey, you can't raise money in the United States unless you're a licensed professional or, you know, you're licensed by the SEC. However, there is these things called exemptions that allow you to raise money if you're an unlicensed person. And kind of getting that bug in our ear and learning how to really structure that business correctly has made this totally explode.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, the thing that a lot of us run into though is we might have the knowledge, we might have the contacts, but we don't have the experience. And correct me if I'm wrong, you guys didn't run into this because you're in self-storage right now, right? Yep. I mean, you guys own 5,500, I think, plus units at this point, which is amazing because you've done that in just a few short years. But, you know, we don't have that track record. And when you guys started out, you didn't have that track record either. It's not like you could go out and
Right.
say, hey, look at me. I got 5,500 units. You didn't own a single unit, not one. So how did you overcome some of those objections? You know, you're like, hey, I did some condo flips. I did some single family, but I don't really know anything about. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, it's still very difficult. There's always objections. And it doesn't matter how big your company gets or how many deals you have under your belt. I think the thing that we kind of kidded ourselves with is, man, once we get this deal built and sold, you know, we're going to open up all these doors and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, all the lenders are going to just totally trust us. And then of course, you know, the project that you're in, you know, admittedly, we ran into constraints with the banks because they said, you know, have you guys ever built a project this big? And we're like, no. And they're like, well, you're asking for some great leverage here, and you've never done something like this. And we're like, well, we used to build condos, and, you know, and they're like, yeah, that's like much smaller and different product type and different market, and we really don't care. So, you know, you just have to, I can't stress the importance of having a good team. And I know that's such a loosely used term that's thrown around a lot, but, you know, Scott and I didn't have the best knowledge on finance and underwriting. And so we found a partner who helped us really close that gap, which has been, you know, very well. You know, I didn't know a heck of a lot about leadership and, you know, leading a company and growing a business. So Scott played into that. And my strengths are really in the relationships that you can foster with people. So having, you know, the financial backbone mixed with the leadership backbone and the relationships, you know, that really kind of helps things come together. So when investors have the tough questions about financing or how you're going to structure something, you've actually got the backbone to kind of assure them that you're in capable hands in doing the deal. And I think that's why most of our investors do 50 to 100,000 and they just like clockwork do it in every single deal, because they know that, you know, why every deal is a little bit different. You know, they're in capable hands that are going to be able to, you know, perform on a project even when times get super tough. And, you know, I know you're in a project like that, but, you know, hey, we're out of the ground. We're going to get that, you know, the project open. It's going to be a great project still. And, you know, sometimes things get delayed and, you know, you just want a team that you know is going to, A, do all the due diligence that is needed to get it done, and B, you know, be able to be super creative when times get really tough and never quit. So.
Right. No, that's key. Yeah. So speaking of that, I mean, you said to this day, even you guys, you know, when you go to raise money from a bank or get a loan from a bank, they're going, hey, wait, what about X, Y, or Z? So how did you guys overcome that, you know, on this particular, I think you maybe mentioned the name, but maybe you didn't, but Black Diamond.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was tough. I mean, we had a project that we thought was going to cost X amount, and really it was Y. It was much more expensive. And, you know, that changed the game. And, you know, but one thing we did know we have is that when we bought the property, we had transformed property from unentitled land and titled land. So we knew we had increased the value. So we just got creative and we said, you know, this property will probably appraise for a much higher value than what we bought it for. So we used that appraisal to meet the LTC loan to cost requirements to get into the loan. And then we partnered with a really good debt broker that's based in Seattle. So, you know, we all know our limits, right? And so I actually went to our title company and I said, hey, who do you know that's getting all the loans done? Who's the broker? Who do I need to talk to in my market? And I got the best title company, WFG does a lot of our title closings whenever possible. And I went to the title guy and he said, you got to talk to these guys. They get it done. They close, you know, $200 million a year in loans, at least in construction loans every year. They have all the relationships. They'll get you gussied up. So when I went to them, they said, they looked at my file and they said, Ryan, you got a good project here, but you're presenting it completely wrong. You know, you've got to, you know, and a saying that they told me, which was great, which was you got to go slow to go fast. You got to go back. You got to really simplify your underwriting. You got to come in with a story. You got to come in with a strategy and a plan and really put a lot of value behind the effort that you put into this project to get it to the point where it's at. And, you know, assure the bank that it's going to have a good DSCR once it stabilizes. So they really, you know, they really helped me kind of go to the, you know, I kind of view them as like, they're like the stage crew, right? They get you ready for the big performance. They get you ready to go on stage and be your best. And so, you know, just kind of recognizing that, hey, I was kind of hitting a brick wall here. Who can I call that can really become my expert to solve this problem? And they got us great terms. They got us great LTC and they got us a smoking interest rate, great permanent financing terms. So it's a construction loan that rolls into a permanent financing situation. And they had a really creative strategy with the SBA coming in and doing a 504 loan. And just having a team like that you can kind of tap and just not being afraid to network, you know, not to ramble on about this a little bit, but that title guy came into my life because I went to a conference one year and I set up a booth and I met the guy at a conference and we decided to have lunch together and I had no idea where it was going to go. Why would I need to go sit down with a title company? And I mean, usually title company stuff, you don't even think about, right? You just go and you close and it's no big deal.
Right.
But this guy, he was connected to everything. He's connected to financing. He's connected to, you know, banks and lenders and other investors, people doing deals in the market, people that want to buy deals. So it's just amazing. You know, find the people in your community. If you don't have any relationships, find the people in the community that do and give them business. You know, whenever I can give that title company our business, I do. A lot of times, unfortunately, it's in the control of the seller, and we're in buy mode right now. So it's tough to say, hey, you know, I can throw you all the business that we try, but, you know, it's tough to do it all. But, you know, and then take care of that person, you know, give them every closing that you can possibly give. So I think kind of that connection, like that cohesiveness in the community that you can really integrate yourself with, creates solutions to challenges, you know, in your network.
Right. And going to the title company, that was really smart. You know, going to the title company and saying, hey guys, who do you know? Because you're absolutely right. Something I would never thought about. Like, these guys know exactly who's underwriting, or not just underwriting, but who's stroking the check for these closings. They know exactly who the lender is. Who's the biggest lender on these real estate transactions? And I call this guy. And then I think it's hilarious that you went to them and then they said, hey man, sorry, but they basically told you how to present to them. I mean,
yeah.
did I lose you?
Exactly. Yeah. And they were like, hey, you're doing this all wrong. You're going to, exact words were, it looks like your underwriting file was done by an Ivy League MBA. They're like, it's so sophisticated, you know, cause that's Ben does a great job, right? It's so sophisticated that, you know, no offense to an underwriter, but an underwriter that's working at a community bank or a local bank is not going to understand like all these algorithms and formulas and how, I mean, heck, I don't even get it sometimes, right? So, right. You know, I have to really dumb it down. So let's dumb down what you're talking about here and be real pointed with a story. And that really helped get the deal done.
That's interesting because they wanted more of a story with a little bit, a story with numbers, not numbers that tell a story.
Yeah, I would say that's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
That's really fascinating. So I guess the word to the wise, and I was talking to somebody, at the SBA about this a couple of weeks ago, and she said, you know, this needs to be in bullet points. Like when you're going to your lender, this is bullet points, not paragraphs. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's really interesting. So, man, that's fantastic. And so now you guys are here, you're going gangbusters, you're syndicating. Tell us really kind of how 2020 has treated you, how syndications are changing for you. Are you seeing investor taste change as the year has gone on? I mean, can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting year. We've raised, we'll end 2020 raising about $20 million. And a kind of a fun fact, that's $54,700 a day.
Good job. That's amazing.
Kind of fun to, I think that's the math. Hopefully that math works out. But
We won't get our calculators out.
So we. You know, it's been all over the map. There's been people that when the pandemic hit, they were like, oh my gosh, I took my chips out of the stock market. I've got liquid cash and I want to invest more. Some people were, you know, were, hey, oh my gosh, I might lose my job and my rentals are vacant and, you know, I'm having a liquidity crunch. You know, I'm not investing. I'm closed up. So kind of all over the map. And, you know, I wouldn't say that conclusively you could say it was harder to raise money this year or easier. I think it's actually been about the same when you get, when given the kind of the pros and the cons of investing this year. But this year has been good. It's what this year has done is really reinforced the fact that having flexible capital is critically important to get deals done, because right now there's a lot of deals that people can't get done because of the lack of available capital, the lack of available lending. I mean, we had the loan for our project, Sam, you know, we had that lined up in October. And then as soon as the pandemic hit, we were supposed to close in March, boom, everybody just shut down. And, you know, having that flexible capital, you know, we actually, I don't know if I elaborated on this very much, but we actually had an investor come in and do a cash infusion to jumpstart the project. And, you know, just having that relationship and having that in our network really helped us to get out of the ground, because we needed to start that project in the summertime. Otherwise, building in the winter is an absolute disaster in the Pacific Northwest because of the rain and the mud. And, you know, you have to export a lot more dirt off because it gets muddy. And then you have to fill, which is very expensive. So we really saved the project, not only time from the point of opening and starting to produce revenue, but also the added expense of building in the rain. So,
oh gosh, yeah. I mean, you can go through enormous amounts of rock, you know, backfilling all that mud that you just took out just so you can drive across it and put a building up. And there's no end to that hole of rock you can put down. So, and that gets salty fast. So good for you guys for being creative in solving that. I want to jump into the final four here. And of course, I want to do this again sometime soon. But the final four questions are, if you were to distill everything you know, and maybe we'll hold this particularly as it relates to capital raising. If you were to distill everything you know about capital raising and had to give one piece of advice to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Don't the money's everywhere. So it's at your, you can raise capital at a coffee shop. You can raise capital at a country club. But don't overlook any situation. So, you know, I'll give you a great example. We just had somebody place a lot of money in a project, and they were sitting on our list for 4 years, 4+ years, never had invested in any of our projects. I met them at a fix and flip event 4 years ago, and a local event, you know, just hole in the wall, you know, went to dinner afterwards at Applebee's and had a little conversation and didn't think much of it, put them on our list, and all of a sudden, boom, big investor, right? You know, there's all, and you know, kind of the joke I give is, you know, if you know what a leads group is, it's a group where it's like a mortgage broker, real estate agent, insurance agent, whatever. We all sit around and we've raised a lot of money from those groups. So just, you know, don't feel like you've got to be, you know, in some fancy place to do it. It pretty much can come anywhere. So don't overlook those opportunities. I'd probably say that'd be a big, you know, big piece of advice from the capital raising side.
Right. No, that's fantastic. Yeah. Cause all of us, I think, are looking for that one avenue that's going to be the golden ticket, but you're here to tell us it's everywhere. What's one thing that you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Yeah. Masterminds are a big one, you know, meeting with others in the industry, trying to be in a room where you're not the smartest person and constantly trying to evolve that. The other thing is, you know, teaching and giving education. We actually have our own meetup that we have now on a regular basis. It's all virtual right now, but hopefully it'll be in person soon. And it's called Investment Syndication Simplified. We actually have a YouTube channel and we do a call every other week on Thursday. And we just talk about sharpening the axe for a passive investor and how to evaluate a syndication and kind of the things that go, all the nuts and bolts to it. So I like doing that because it forces me to like have calls, kind of probably what you're doing, Sam. You know, it's like you have this podcast and you have to like, it kind of forces you to do something, right? You know, think about the contact, think about who you're going to call. And that kind of puts you under the gun to like, hey, I got to do a podcast every day, every week, every month. And, you know, getting some content together to present is important. And I'm doing that for my team. We're growing our IR team a little bit. So Lauren, who does a lot of our marketing, who's transitioning to IR right now, I actually have her put the presentations together and say, hey, you know, pick one thing that you're not quite sure how it works in syndication, and then make that your topic that is presented at the next meetup, because then it forces you to kind of learn about something that you don't really know much about. Now you're teaching it. So now you're kind of like, you know, it forces you to be a little bit more engaged in the subject and really understand it.
Oh man. Yeah. Nothing like presenting to make you go, hey, I got to go study. So that's fantastic. Making the world a better place. What's one thing you're doing right now to give back?
You know, I've really, you know, there's a guy that never done a syndication, and I just totally helped him through the whole thing. You know, no cost, no, you know, I'm not offering that as a free service to the whole world, but every once in a while, you know, our mission is to improve lives through real estate. So I definitely, you know, go the extra mile to make sure at least once a week there's somebody that I'm helping, you know, advance their real estate career and make that better. So.
Right. Yeah. There's nothing like using the skill set you have to help others. So you don't have to, you know, be drilling wells in order to be, you know, a good force in the world. So good for you for doing that. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah. Spartan-investors.com is our website, or you can email me at Ryan, R-Y-A-N at Spartan-investors.com.
Awesome. Ryan, thanks for your time today. Certainly appreciate it. As always, good to see you. And yeah, do appreciate it and look forward to doing it again sometime soon.
Thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.